GIJoeCustoms.com is the home of the world's premier G.I. Joe customizing website. Its purpose, to learn, improve, share, entertain, and showcase the work of the customizing community, wherever and whenever possible, to whomever shows interest. We'll help the community. Wherever there's customizing, Joe Customs is there.
Joe Customs.
What's up?
Full Force Podcast. You know, having to stare at reference of the beautiful Scarlett Johansson all day, that sucked. I pushed everybody to do the best Mara Jade we could. I can draw you Speedball. In fact, I would love to draw somebody Speedball. No one's ever going to ask me that. 3¾ inches of scale I love.
That's what she said. Speaking of helmet not fitting on with the collar, are you guys circumcised?
Welcome to the Joe Customs Podcast. I'm John, a.k.a. P-Love. I'm here with Dan, a.k.a. The Spectre.
Good evening, everyone.
Brad, a.k.a. TR101AL.
What's up?
Jeez. It's going to be one of those nights. And Jeff, a.k.a. Joe Michael 70.
Good evening, everyone.
And our special guest tonight, Eric Aranya.
Ah, yes. Greetings from Rhode Island.
Eric's on because he's been taking the tour of the podcast world, and I've been meaning to get a hold of him for several months now, and finally got to fit him into the schedule. So, Eric, let me start off with the question that's been on my mind. Does Boss Fight Studio, do they care that you're like the mouthpiece for them?
Well, they know they can't shut me up, so and pretty soon we'll all be kind of doing a couple of podcasts together as a group. I don't think it's gone up, but Dave Proctor and I have a new segment. It'll rotate. It won't always be Dave and I, but Boss Fight has a segment on the spinoff of What's on Joe Mind.
The UK rollout guy.
The Action Force one.
Full Force Podcast.
On that spinoff, we're going to have a Boss Fight Builds segment where we talk about how to update Action Force figures to modern, using modern figures, modern G.I. Joe figures.
And that's really cool.
Yeah, that is really cool.
Yeah, I mean, Dave, Andrew, and I were all, you know, customizers and collectors, and, you know, Dave and I especially are pretty rabidly obsessed with customizing, and have been forever. So, full force, that's it. Oh, Dave Tree is going to kill me.
No. I'll splice it in. You'll sound awesome. I'm going to be on that podcast.
Full Force Podcast.
No.
Yeah, but he'll sub it in with my voice, and it'll sound completely different. But like one of those TV, when they show a movie on TV, and then you get the whole language.
Dan, could you do that now?
Full Force Podcast.
That would be amazing.
Too bad it's not a video podcast. We have the whole movie lips thing going on.
All right, so... Speaking of customizing for a long time, as a fan, like, did you come in customizing, like, into the online community, any community? Did you come in customizing G.I. Joe, or did you have other interests? Like, where did you start when you were customizing?
I started customizing when I was probably, let me see, The Real American Hero started in 1982, Snow Job came out in 1984. I believe. My first custom was with Snow Job.
What'd you do?
I had to have representations of characters of Snake Eyes, Stalker, and Breaker in Arctic Gear, like issue 2 of Real American Hero, where they go up to the Arctic as the first appearance of Quinn. So my first customs were putting Snake Eyes and Stalker's head on Snow Job to, and repainting them badly, because I was like 10, and with like paint that didn't quite dry correctly on the figure, and so that was my first custom. I've always customized as a kid. I would swap parts around and do minor repaints. I had really bad customs of the Justice League and the X-Men and Avengers using G.I. Joe parts, which of course didn't work very well.
Eric, if I can interject here, do you have any existing customs that you could take photos of from this era?
I have none. I have none. I'm guessing at some point...
He sold them for $1 trillion.
I'm betting those ones went in the trash at some point. I remember using Crystal Ball's head for a Wolverine. I re-sculpted his hair and actually like sculpted it so his like mask was hanging off the back of his neck. I'm sure it was terrible, but at the time it was very, very like something for like I was at this point I was probably like 11 or 12, and I just doing that sort of thing. None of my friends did that. It was just, I was the only one who was doing that sort of thing.
So where'd you grow up?
I grew up in South Florida, Fort Lauderdale area. And yeah, my customizing and my collecting just kind of evolved from there. When I got out of G.I. Joe, I never was totally out of G.I. Joe. I always, even as a teenager, after I'd started dating girls and stuff, I still bought toys here and there, just not as many. And then I delved back into toy collecting hardcore when the Playmates Star Trek line came out. I'm a big Trekkie, and even though they did, by the end of that line, they did, hundreds and hundreds of figures. That was a fairly comprehensive toy line. It still wasn't enough. I was customizing them at that point and selling. I would customize two at a time, and I would sell them in a local comic shop, science fiction / comic shop, that would put them up in a display case, and I would sell them. I usually got like, $50 a pop or something, which wasn't a huge amount, but it helped me pay for more toys to then break apart and paint.
That's pretty cool. I mean, an entrepreneur at an early age.
Yeah. It's surprising that I didn't try to get into toy design earlier than I ended up getting into toy design, because I was already toy designing like as a kid. I was doing it. I was figuring stuff out, and one of the things about G.I. Joe's was I could take them apart. And I remember trying to break apart my Star Wars figures and other figures too, because I wanted to see the insides and how they worked and stuff. Like G.I. Joe, you took that screw out and you saw how the mechanics and they were engineered. Oh, I wanted to know how everything was engineered. And, nothing else was as easy to take apart as G.I. Joe.
Let me pop in here and follow up my earlier question. So how did you get from South Florida to Hasbro?
Well, I went to college late. I was in my mid-20s when I went to college in Savannah, Georgia. I went to college for comic books. Sequential art. My degree is literally in Batman.
I gotta kick my guidance counselor's ass.
To be fair, everybody told me that was a stupid thing to do. I just wouldn't listen. I thought I was gonna break into comics, and had I gone to school like 5 years earlier, I probably would have broken into comics. Because like, right when I kind of came out of school is when comics really started to nosedive and take their slump, which they've never really fully recovered from. Now, even if I could have broken into comics earlier, I probably wouldn't have stayed in comics, because the reality is there's no real money in it. And, comics have changed so much from what they were 5, 10 years ago, 15 years ago. So after Savannah, my girlfriend at the time, who is my wife now, we moved back to Florida, to Central Florida, for a little while. And this is going to turn out to be a very long explanation. I got real sick right out of college, and eventually we found out it was cancer. So I went a whole year, you know, while I was trying to find work right out of college, I went a whole year of chemo and radiation and all of that. After that, my wife and I, we basically, like, literally, it was a few months after that, we got married, sold our cars, packed up a truck, and we moved to New York City. We were like, we're done, we were moving on, we didn't care what was safe and what was smart or anything, we just moved. And we moved to New York with no jobs, became roommates with a buddy of ours from college, and we stayed there for a while, kept trying to break into comics, worked, you know, as a buyer for a Halloween shop for a couple of years. I worked at Wizard for about 6 months or something.
Wizard the magazine?
Yeah. It wasn't anything glamorous, though. A, because it was Wizard. B, because I just worked in the warehouse. I was trying to get up into the editorial section and stuff, but I wasn't there very long before my son was born, and I went home. And my wife went back to work, and I stayed home. And at that time, my friend Andrew Franks had just kind of, he had started working, doing some freelance stuff for Hasbro. I helped him on a couple of projects, and then he became a temp at Hasbro, and I got to go in and actually talk to, show my portfolio around to some people like David Vonner and John Warden, Steve Redinger, and a couple of other really, you know, great toy designers who gave me a lot of great tips and stuff. I redid my portfolio and really quickly just started doing design work, freelance design work for Hasbro. Well, the first thing I did as a designer for Hasbro was the 25th anniversary blowtorch. And then from that, right around the time I started working for them, they was the ramp up for both Rise of Cobra and for Star Wars: The Clone Wars. So there was a ton of work, and my wife, I was literally doing work for, you know, Star Wars and G.I. Joe with my infant son in one hand and my other hand drawing on a light box, like inputs and figures and stuff, or sitting on the computer and compiling stuff. My wife would come home, we would make dinner, and then we would trade off, and she was helping me finish up work. Like, we had so much work, so she left her job, and she started freelancing for Hasbro, too. And we were making, like, we were doing so well that and it was kind of becoming obvious that this was where our careers were heading, was towards toy design. So we decided to leave New York and come to Massachusetts. Then I really, like, only a few months after I started after we moved to Massachusetts, I started temping at Hasbro, attempted at Hasbro for a few years, and then they hired me. And when they hired me, I had them move me to Rhode Island to be closer to work, because I was an hour away from Hasbro. So it was an hour back and forth every single day. Literally, like, we bought a house across the street from Hasbro. My house was closer to my desk than other parts of the Hasbro building were. So I used to just walk to work. I walked home for lunch every day, had lunch with my wife, and like that's how I ended up in Rhode Island from Florida, because admittedly, like, I never thought for a second I would live in Rhode Island of all places. Like, I like the sun, I like the heat, I like, you know, I like the temperate weather. I don't love the snow at all. And here I am in the Northeast.
You mentioned, like, your portfolio, like, Were they generic tips on the advice you got, or were they very specific to what you were doing? Like, is there anything that you gained from that, those conversations, that you could pass on to other people?
Oh, sure. I went to school for comics, so character design was something that I knew how to do from both comic book standpoint, but not just like the drawing, but also, you know, the color balance and the, you know, the design and the whys and wherefores, looking up reference, all of that stuff. I had, my initial sketches, though, that I had showed them, the turnarounds I had showed them. I'm trying to remember what characters I did. I had some Marvel characters and some superheroes and some G.I. Joe, like, update designs. Like, I think I had a Steeler in there, and a Iron Grenadier. But I was still drawing characters a little bulkier than they should be. Like, I was still kind of superhero-y. That was something that, you know, John Warden, he was the first thing, he was like, I can see you're from a superhero standpoint and everything. These are real people. So, you know, slim them down. Don't draw them so big and beefy and stuff like that for, you know, stuff like Joe's. So that, you know, that was great, you know, that realizing that I needed to kind of have both, you know, all different types of body types are important. So, learning to draw that, knowing what not to draw is really important. For toy design, especially, like, I can draw, I can sit there and spend 20 minutes drawing a beautiful hand that's then going to be on a piece of paper that's, you know, 11 inches by 17 inches. That hand is going to be very small on that piece of paper, and the sculptor knows what a hand looks like. So you just got to kind of get that. You got to get that shape, that pose of the hand, and then, you know, you could shadow the rest of it in. Like, it doesn't really need, you don't really need to draw every single wrinkle in that finger and everything. You know, the sculptor knows it's there. The sculptor knows what a hand is supposed to look like. If you have specific reference on gloves, you draw the hand, you pull the reference on the gloves that you want him to be, that the character should be wearing. Or boots, you know, a specific cantina pouch, that, like, the way it snaps around the pouch and everything. You gotta draw it, but at the same time, it's almost more important to have the reference readily there to do that. The blowtorch is a great example, because I based a lot of the I think I talked about this on one of the other podcasts recently. I based a lot of the blowtorch, the updated blowtorch details on fire jumpers. The firefighters that parachute into forest fires. So I was pulling reference on, like, the collars and, like, pulling close-up reference on the gloves and the boots and the cuffs of the pants and stuff like that, because, like, that's almost more important than actually drawing the piece.
And when you say pulling reference, you mean you just include photos or clippings, yeah, or something like that?
Yeah, photo reference. You compile a sheet of photo reference, often is the way it's done. You know, if you want helmets to look like this and stuff like that. Like, I think I had, because Blowtorch was my first one, I was really trying to knock it out of the park. I think I had, like, two sheets of reference. like, just, I just went way overboard on every little thing.
No, I do that for customs. You know, when you want specific boots, or you're thinking a specific avenue for a custom, yeah, you research it and try to bring all that attention to detail into the custom.
Yeah.
Yeah, we all do that to some degree or another.
It's something everyone, you know, you guys all do as customizers. I do it as a customizer too. I sit there and if I'm working on, you know, I don't know, barricade, I sit there and I pull up, I Google G.I. Joe barricade, and I look at other people's customs. I look at the figure, I look at turnarounds, I go to Yojo and I, you know, look at the front, the back, all the accessories. If there's, like, multiple versions of a character, I try and, like, look and research each version to see if there's anything I could pull from another version that's just, like, a really cool detail. I did the same thing as a designer. Like, when I designed any Star Wars figure I worked on, I would usually sit there and read their Wikipedia page, and I would look at their, you know, with Star Wars, height is really important. So, like, I would look at their height. I would, you know, because of that, I kind of know a lot of the Star Wars characters' heights offhand, because I've stared at them so much. It's the same thing. That detail and knowing all that little stuff is important to making a figure complete, almost. Like, to make them feel like they're a real person, not just a plastic toy.
I fully agree with that completely.
That was freaking awesome.
I probably went on a little bit longer than you wanted me to.
Oh, no.
That was very interesting. So how long were you officially with Hasbro then, after Freelance and before Boss Fight?
I was with Hasbro from my temp time to the time I left at the beginning of this year. I was there for about 5.5 years, and in that time I worked mostly on Star Wars. I started on Star Wars, and then I went over to exclusives. When I was on exclusives, I worked on Iron Man 2, Captain America, Thor, Marvel Universe, a little bit on Transformers, a little bit on G.I. Joe, a little bit on Chuck the Talking Truck, and a little bit on Beyblade. So I kind of had the opportunity to work on a lot of different brands. And then I went back to Star Wars mainline after that, and I pretty much only worked on Star Wars for the last, like, 2 or 3 years that I was there.
Now, I've heard you mention before that you did some of the work on the unmasked Avengers at Iron Man 2.
Yeah, I did the three-pack that was supposed to be, that was Tony Stark, James Rhodes, and then it was going to have the all-new Scarlett Johansson Black Widow figure. I did that set that then didn't come out in the U.S., but somehow ended up coming out in Australia and Europe for some reason. It wasn't supposed to, so it did. So it's out there and floating around.
Have you been able to try and track it down yet?
Craig from the Fooshcast was going to see if he could track me one down. Okay. I do have one already, yes. Because, you know, I worked on it. But so I do have one, and it's one of my favorite pieces because I, you know, it was on exclusives. You don't always get to do all new figures, so getting to do an all new Black Widow was really cool for me. And, you know, having to stare at reference of the beautiful Scarlett Johansson all day, that sucked.
Yeah, that's rough. One of the things we hear from, like, some of the Star Wars designers is eventually they get bored of doing Luke and Han and all the main cast over and over again. Was there something you were really glad you were able to get into there, you know, some either a figure or design element that you were just, this is what's been missing, or something you're just really proud of?
Probably the single thing I'm most proud of, I've got a few that I was able to do in Star Wars as a designer, but the one I'm most proud of is recently there was the little mini Jedi starfighter that came with Yoda. I got to I pitched that and I completely made it up. It's like this, it's a Jedi starfighter that's sized for Yoda. So it's like smaller and it's got the big flip out warp nacelles that kind of pop out. And then, there are also missile launchers, and the, when you open up the hatch, Yoda basically has a car seat inside of it. So you can take the car seat out and fit a normal figure in there. So I also got to make up a droid to go on the side of the ship. So it's just a Build-A-Droid head, like just R2 dome. But because I got to make it up, it's nowhere in the movies. I just made up like what I think Yoda's droid would look like. And if you take that head off and you can put it on any of the other Build-A-Droid bodies, so you can make Yoda's full droid as if it, you know, because like Yoda, I picture Yoda like riding on the top of the droid's head, like riding around the Jedi temple.
I'm actually making a figure of that right now. I have the droid dome. I got it in part of a trade. And nice. I assembled a standard R2 body from the neck down.
Yeah,
I'm thinking of a color scheme right now. I'm going to play off that one little black rectangle that's on there.
Yeah.
You know, the rest of the rectangles are all that kind of reddish color.
Yeah.
I'm playing off that one little black mark to try to work off the detailing on the rest of the panels.
Oh, nice. I tried to make the droid pop off because the ship is, you know, green, and I'm actually trying to Google a picture of it right now because I don't have one right in front of me. The ship is like that, like warm gray and then the green. So I wanted the droid to really pop. So he's like that copper color with like the orangey red panels. So he like really pops off. I know what, when I was at work, when I was still at Hasbro, I had sitting on my desk that head on one of the existing Build-A-Droid figures that I just like put that head on. I can't remember which one, but it had some copper hits on it and it looked really nice, but making up a new deco for it would be great. If just as an aside, one of the things I actually thought of, I really wanted to do on the droid, but I just couldn't justify spending the extra deco money to do, was I wanted to make the droid like look all rusted and like covered with moss. Like Yoda doesn't really take care of his droid, so it's a little beat up, and like if it had been on Dagobah, it would have been like covered in moss and rust and just like beat up and dented. Like in my head, like Yoda is not the type of Jedi who's like vain and is going to really care about his his droid. Like, his robes are a little tattered because he doesn't care about appearance so much. Like,
but when I paint it up, I'll make sure I'll do that. I'll give it a nice rusty, a little bit of green moss.
Yeah, like...
Yeah. Yoda has modded his astromech droid to get Dish Network.
Yeah.
When I saw that they were, like, downsizing that class of vehicles, Yoda was the one that kind of stuck out. I was like, that's actually really smart. If you're going to downsize it for one of the Jedi, he's the perfect one. You know, it was one of the few vehicles that really made sense to fit in that size.
Yeah. I also got to do the new Yoda. Yeah, I mean, that figure doesn't have a lot of articulation, but he came out really nice. His deco's a little sloppy in the eyes in production, but sometimes you can't help that stuff. But I did get to do that new head with the little gold and silver Jedi headset on that Anakin and Obi-Wan wear, which I thought was really funny that I got to put that on a Yoda.
That's awesome.
I have a question for you.
Sure.
Is there anything you wanted to do with the Star Wars line but were unable to do, aside from the deco on the droid?
I always wanted to do more EU stuff. I'm a very big fan of the Timothy Zahn series of novels.
Oh, yeah.
And Mar Jade and Grand Admiral Thrawn are my favorite Star Wars characters, even above any of the characters from the movies. And, you know, I did get to do Mar Jade, which right before I left, she's not out yet. I'm unsure if she is coming out. I don't really know. I'm not privy to any of that information anymore. But
she's coming out in the second wave of the Black Series.
And yeah.
Scheduled for the late fall.
Yeah, I mean, I did that whole first year of Black Series stuff, or, you know, got most of it ready, because it had started, we had announced it at Toy Fair a couple of years ago as a Droid Factory, but then it got changed to Black Series, so, I mean, I had worked on that whole set, so, you know, it's probably something I'm going to go out, and even though I don't really collect Star Wars, I'm probably going to go out and buy all of that stuff, because I worked on it, but the Mara Jade is one that I really, really wanted for myself, because I really pushed to do... I pushed everybody to do the best Mara Jade we could, and I was really happy with the way she came out, all her articulation, the samples I had seen before I left, like, all her articulation was working, like, fantastic. She had the blaster holster that can go on her hip or on the back of her belt, like in the comic.
Oh, very nice.
You know, she had, the lightsaber hilt. I had to drop the cape out at the last minute for cost, which was kind of a bummer. She was originally going to have a hooded cape, but I couldn't afford it. As far as other EU stuff, I always wanted to do a lot of stuff, like, you know, anything from the Thrawn series. I really wanted to do, like, a pregnant Leia, or even just, like, a Jedi Knight Leia from the later novels, where she wears, like, the white robes, and she's got, like, gray in her hair and stuff.
Oh, yeah, very nice.
I would have loved to have done a lot of that stuff, but, you know, the EU is such a hard sell because it's, you don't really know how many people, you know, X amount of people have seen Star Wars, and then there's a smaller amount of those people who collect the toys, and then there's a smaller amount of people who have read the EU, and then there's a smaller amount of those people who, like, collect the toys to collect the EU, so it's like, the EU is at the bottom of an upside-down pyramid in sales, so it's hard to push a lot of the EU stuff. But, you know, I would have loved to have done, you know, like, more of the Rogue Squadron characters, like, you know, some of the cool, like, different X-Wings and stuff like that would have been really fun to work on, but it was tough to do.
Yeah, it's a shame. I'm a big proponent of the expanded universe as well, and I would love to have seen figures of the Nagri and
all
these other characters.
Well, you know, there were photos a couple of years back of the Wookiee. I can't remember which Wookiee, what the Wookiee's name was from the Timothy Zahn novels, but it was there was supposed to be a comic pack of the Wookiee and the Nogrei.
Yeah, I remember reading about that, but it never surfaced.
Yeah, it never surfaced. It never got made. I worked on the tail end of that product with another designer named Brian Parrish, who he had done the most of the work on it, and then I had helped him out with some deco stuff on it. But it was really exciting to work on those because I was like, ooh, Nogrei, like, that's awesome. Like, he was, like, you know, such a cool presence in the Timothy Zahn novels and stuff. I would have loved to have gotten those out eventually, but
Was that based on the comic appearance where they were big and, like, hulking, or was it based on the novel where they were short?
It was short, and it was tight and muscular, but it wasn't like bulky. He was based on, there was some alien character artwork from a book that like basically went through all the alien races in Star Wars.
Oh, the Essential Guide to Alien Species. Yeah.
And it was like this really nice artwork, and I think that was mostly based on, it was like a mix of that and the comic a little bit, like kind of hybridizing them.
Okay.
So yeah, that's another thing with the, you know, with characters like the EU, it's really hard to establish, like, artist to artist, the things can look so different, the details can look so different. If something's in the movie, it is what it looks like. That, like, that's the end of the story. Like, that is what it is.
Yeah, but it's actually a physical model to work on.
Yeah. I know, like, there was a lot of ups and downs with Mara Jade, because, like, originally I wanted to do, like, the Emperor's Hand, you know, Sith Assassin style Mara Jade, and, like, the body armor and stuff like that. And then, but then when I was literally working on that input, I was like redesigning it, because like there's some great like novel covers of her wearing this armor, so I was like redesigning it and making it work a little better as an action figure. In the middle of this, the Jedi Knight version won, the, you know, the Mara Jade Skywalker won the fans choice poll, but then the Sith Assassin was the number two, so it was like we had to make a choice. It was like, well, really, the Mara Jade Skywalker version won, so we had to do that one. So we switched it, and then we went back and forth on which kind of version to do, but really, she appears mostly on the comic covers and stuff, and the novel covers, still wearing, you know, the sleeveless black leather with the brown straps. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of, even though we had done that figure twice before, it still seemed to be the one that we should do, and it, as a huge fan of the Timothy Zahn stuff, I didn't think the last version was as good as it could be. Or it was more that we had been doing so much better. We had improved so much. I really thought it was time to redo her in her completely classic look, which is the sleeveless leather outfit. So I kind of pushed to do that. And I know a lot of fans were upset because they wanted the one, either they wanted her in the green, like Jedi robes, or they wanted her in the white like tank top, or the white like t-shirt with the black vest over it. And I apologize to all those fans that they really wanted that version, but we had to make a choice, and sometimes, you know, they're hard choices to make, so.
Yeah, the one you went with, though, that's the one everybody knows, because as you said, it's been done as a figure twice already, and yeah. She appeared in a lot of the novels and comic covers, so it made more sense from a sales standpoint. People are more likely to recognize it.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like, she still wears that outfit on a lot of novel covers after she marries Luke. So it, like, it worked out still that it's a, that's her classic look. That's Luke's Bespin outfit to her. Like, that's Han's white shirt and black vest to her. Like, that's her classic outfit. So it kind of made sense to do her in that outfit again.
You've mentioned, like, costing out or trying to fit a figure, having to remove an accessory here or there, without going into too much detail. Is that, like, per figure or assortment? Like, how did you figure what stays, what goes?
Sometimes it has to do, it's per assortment. You go in, you know, you get your, you do your initial, like, your initial pitch, your initial wave is your wish list. You want to do all of this stuff in this wave. All these characters are going to come with all these accessories. Like, you know, maybe it's not just a lightsaber. It's going to be a lightsaber and a hilt and another lightsaber that the character uses for 2 seconds in the movie. But I want to add it because I want this figure to be the best one there is. And interchangeable heads, interchangeable hands. Maybe there's like a soft goods robe. But then the costs come back. Your quotes come back and you look at it and you're like, whoa, we're not even close to budget. So you look and you decide, you're like, well, your first choice is how, you know, depending on how far off you are, do you pull an entirely new figure out because of tooling costs, or do you start nitpicking each one and pulling like, oh, we're going to pull the soft goods from this one because it's not totally necessary. We're going to pull these two accessories over here and this accessory. So it's a balancing game. Not every wave ends up being the way you pick it apart isn't the same. Every character, the way you pick them apart isn't the same. You got to make your choices. Sometimes it's less expensive to make a plastic skirt than a soft goods skirt. And on Star Wars, that's always a big thing because if you make a clone with a plastic skirt, well, he can't ride the bark speeder. So you will want them to have that soft good skirt, but sometimes that's more expensive. Sometimes it's not more expensive. It's like a weird thing. It kind of depends on the situations going on overseas.
So I would rather have the vinyl skirts than the cloth ones, because in all honesty, I really dislike the way soft goods look at the scale. They never hang right.
Yeah, they don't look right. I'll tell you those. I'm 50-50. Sometimes, like, I really want that look of the nice sculpted, like, textured cloak or cape. Other times, you know, like with an Anakin, we found that perfect balance where we were doing the soft goods skirt and then covering it with the sculpted flaps, so you only saw the skirt on the side, which was really nice because then all of his articulation still worked. Like, in my head, once you have all that articulation, if you're going to cover up the hips with this big bulky plastic skirt, well, why do you have the articulation? They may as well just be a slug, you know, from the waist up. So, like, with some of the Jedi, we found that perfect, like, I felt like it was a perfect balance where we could do a mix of soft goods and plastic, so it looked really nice. But you're right, when you have, like, a full soft goods skirt or robe, it doesn't really ever look like the movie. And kind of no matter what you do, you never can totally make it look like the movie, unless you're, you know, paying for really expensive fabric that's, you know, textured or, like, treated to look like something specific, and then you're running your costs back up. So I kind of understand both arguments. I'm a big proponent of figures being able to fit in vehicles, too. So, like, if you're kind of making it so they can't fit in a vehicle, it's kind of weird.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that, so, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I see both points, and I agree differently. I kind of always looked at it as, especially on Star Wars, you could look at it as a character to character to character. You know, some characters didn't need ankle joints, some characters don't need wrist joints, so some characters need all of it. Some characters don't need the nice ball hip motion, other characters do. Like, with Star Wars, it was always kind of nice because there was you could pull some from one and add more in others, and, like, there was kind of a give and take. You know, so sometimes you could get away with a plastic cape or a plastic skirt. Other times you would want it to be soft goods. So you kind of go back and forth. I went back and forth on that a lot on Star Wars. So
one of the things that comes up and is, like, when you're part swapping with the modern era, different pegs in the wrists, different sizes neck balls. Did you have any input at all? Like, were you ever telling the sculptors, no, you got to use the same one as this because they're going to want to change those heads around?
The sculptors didn't usually, like, we did actually try and keep a lot of that stuff, we pushed to try and keep a lot of that stuff standardized. You know, it was usually the engineering, you know, on the other side of the ocean that would change that stuff or tweak it in order to meet their engineering standards. We did want a standard, but it was really hard to maintain said standard, which was unfortunate, because, you know, yeah, as a customizer, like, I want all the parts to be interchangeable too, and it's not always the case. I'm sitting there whittling down the elbow peg so that I can fit it into a different upper arm, you know.
Yeah, but there's a lot more hits than misses, though. I have to admit that they're fairly consistent among figures, usually produced, like, within the same year or so.
Yeah,
there seems to be some variation as time progresses.
Yeah, we have finally kind of started to push it a little harder the last couple of years. I know I did. It was becoming less of a. It's not really even an issue. It's just a preference. So it was becoming, yeah, you know, the preference was finally being seen. But yeah, you're right. Once you would shift to another year, it would change a little bit again. So, like, if two figures were made in the same year, yeah, a lot of our parts would be more interchangeable. If you were reusing a figure from 2 years ago, it wouldn't really necessarily match up anymore, though. And with Star Wars, a lot of that had to do with, like, height. Like, you know, like, one character's neck might be a little longer than, you know, G.I. Joe is very standardized, because part of the design genius behind G.I. Joe is its interchangeability. With Star Wars, every character is individualized in height, in scale, in body type. So, like, you do have a lot of, you know, you're not always going to be able to put every character's head on every character, and it's not going to work because there are different heights or different, you know, the necks different lengths or what have you. You know, the body types, the actors, so.
When you were, like, doing the designs, did you ever bring in, like, a custom or sculpt something to kind of show a 3D reflection, or was it always a drawing or a digital?
I rarely brought my customs in. I may have a few times here and there. I can't remember any instance where I really did that, though. I almost everything I did was drawing, and all of it I draw on a Cintiq on a computer. I haven't drawn on paper in years. It's kind of weird when I do draw on paper now, because I'm so used to there's like a certain freedom that drawing on a computer gives you. So I've gotten so used to that little bit of freedom that it's really odd to draw on paper now. A while back, I did some sketches for some of the guys from JoeCon, and it was very odd because it was the first time in a long time that I sat and penciled and inked something. I think at the JoeCon in New Orleans, I had done a bunch of sketches for the auction that year, and that was the same thing. Like, it was really strange for me to sit down and draw with a pencil and a marker because I hadn't done it in so long. Everything I'd done for years now has been on a computer, so...
I remember those.
Yeah. It's like, hey, rapidograph. Wow.
During the design process, obviously with, like, you know, the eBay sales and stuff coming over from China, we see a lot of paint variations and stuff. Can you give us just a little bit of a glimpse? Are those, like, planned things that just didn't make it out? Are they just QC things that, no, totally wrong? Could you shed some light on those midnight Chinese designs that we see?
Yeah, sometimes the early protos, like in the design process, you know, I would do the drawings go to the sculptor sculpts, and I'm still part of that whole situation, okaying and, signing off on, you know, these changes or, you know, what have you. The designers would work very closely with the sculptor. And make sure everything is right. No, you know, like, no, push this hand pose a little bit more, like, you know, make his hands a little more gnarly, make his grimace a little more severe, or, you know, or make it more subtle, or make her hair longer, make it shorter, you know, like, there'd be a lot of that. On Star Wars specifically, then, there was a lot of back and forth with Lucasfilm, too, because they had to approve it. And then that sculpt goes to the shop. They make a cast of it, send one to China for them to start the tooling process, and then one would stay in the U.S. for us to paint. So we would, you know, then there's these books, these Pantone books that you go through, and you sit there and you stare at reference for hours as you go through this Pantone book, and you pick hair color and skin color and, you know, the pants color or the stripe on the sleeve color, or, and you pick every color out of this book of these tiny little, like, half-inch squares of color. And on that note, there's not enough brown in those books to do all of the Jedi correctly, because they all wear shades of brown. There's so much brown in Star Wars. so then you would take these colors and give them to the painter, and the painter would then paint up the figure. And sometimes the painter would call you up and go, are you sure you want to do this color? Because it's not looking quite right to the reference. So you'd go down there and you'd look at it, and you'd have to realize you were looking at this half-inch square, this half-inch swatch of color, and then seeing it spread across the surface of an action figure has changed it in your eyes. So then you'd have to pick another color. You'd have to, like, okay, no, we're going to change this color to this color. So they would change that and stuff. And then you would take that figure, you'd photograph it and stuff, and then you'd send that to China for them to make the deco masters off. Now, in the meantime, as a designer, at this point, you've probably already gotten back your one color or multi-crazy color first shot of the action figure. You know, so, like, you've gotten back your Mara Jade, and she's cast in yellow and orange and green for some reason, because that's whatever plastic they had ready to go. So you've now made all your comments on how her arms work. No, her hands are popping out too easy. Make that, you know, increase the friction there. Her head doesn't move enough, or her head is too low on the neck. You need to pull it up a little bit. The gun's not fitting in the holster. So you've made all your comments on this. And then, after you send back those comments, the next time you see that action figure, it's painted. So now you're double-checking all the comments you've made on the way the articulation works and everything, and you're making comments on the deco. no, her hair is the wrong color. The straps are not the proper brown that we expect. Like, this is not what we sent you. You need to change that. Or, so you're making all your comments. So sometimes what's coming out of China is that initial deco sample where there's, they're not approved and correct yet. So that's why you get, like, I'm trying to think of a G.I. Joe example. Like, there's the Hazard Viper with the big yellow strips on his legs and stuff like that that they had, that the Jody class declassified guys had last year. That was just, I don't even know how that mistake may have been made, but that those mistakes do get made. I had gotten back clone troopers with completely different stripes than they were supposed to have. And I mean, like, these weren't stripes that were in the movie anywhere. They were just completely wrong and different and weird. Or I've gotten back figures, like, where the blue stripe on Rex was just this eye-searing bright blue. And it's like, why would you even think this is correct? You know, it's... So, you know, that stuff just happens. And then you try and rush those deco comments back because you want them to have time to run you another sample set for you to approve, because sometimes those deco changes wouldn't happen and they would hit the shelves with these wrong, these incorrect decos. And on Star Wars, that's a huge deal because their correct decos are on screen. So, like on G.I. Joe, if, you know, Snake Eyes comes back and his visor is a slightly different gray than was expected, that's not the worst thing in the world. Like, no one's really ever going to know that, or, you know, unless it's, like, you know, almost white. But, like, no one's really going to know that. But on Star Wars, if Han comes back and his hair is blonde, well, that's a huge deal. You know, that's a huge, huge mistake. So, I don't know if that really answered your question or not.
No, it did.
Okay.
Yeah, but you're going to take all those clone troopers with the wacky stripes. You could have put them on eBay and made a ton of money off the clone fans.
Probably. I would have lost my job, like, way early. And there's contracts that say I'm not allowed to do that stuff.
Oh, fine details in those
contracts. Yeah.
Pays attention to that.
I saw, like, some work you did for Custom Con way back, way, way back in the day.
Oh, my. I did do some stuff for Custom Con once. What was it? Was it Marvel Universe? Was it Marvel Legends stuff?
Some Marvel Legends and some Green Lantern stuff.
Oh yeah, I used to do. I'm a huge Green Lantern. A huge, huge Green Lantern fan, and I did. I used to do a lot of Green Lantern customs.
Were you customizing that while you were in college, or did it come after?
That stuff would have been the Green Lantern stuff would have been going on while I was in college. I had a huge custom collection of DC Universe characters, because I, you know, DC's, I love Marvel, but DC is really my, that's my comic book universe that I love.
I only brought it up so I could mention that you and I are, like, the internet's only Aquaman fans.
Oh, yeah, I'm a huge, huge Aquaman, I still do Aquaman customs, actually. I have a bunch of 6-inch Aquaman customs in the works right now. I still cannot believe that Mattel hasn't made my Peter David era Aquaman figure. It's just insane to me that they haven't made that.
I've told people I would wear my Aquaman underoos if I could still squeeze into them.
Yeah, I too had Aquaman underoos, and I would still wear them if I could. Yeah, I named my son after Aquaman, but my son's name is Oren, so.
I actually had a discussion at work about a week or two ago. Somebody was saying Aquaman was a lame character, and I gave him like 30 excuses why Aquaman's actually a great character when written well. So yeah, it's actually kind of funny.
Well, you know, I've read tons and tons of Aquaman. Right before the new Aquaman series, this is a total nerd boy tangent going on here.
Don't worry about it.
Right before the current Aquaman series started, I went back and I read as much Aquaman stuff as I could in, like, a row. Like, I just spent months just reading. I started from the 70s and read, like, that whole run, and I read, like, you know, the Neil Posner run, and then I read the awesome Sean McLaughlin run, which is one of my favorites from the 80s, and then, of course, the Peter David run is my favorite comic book run of all time. Atlantis Chronicles is actually, I think, the best comic book series of all time. Like, I think it's better than Watchmen or Dark Knight or any of that. Like, I think it's the best thing ever written for comics. So yeah, like, I read all that Aquaman stuff all the way through Brightest Day. I went through and reread all the Brightest Day stuff too after he had come back. And what it actually did for me is it kind of messed up that new Aquaman series. Like, that new Aquaman series is good. I can think of 5 better Aquaman runs, though, that I had just read them, and they were just fresh in my mind, and I think they're so much better than the current stuff. And that's not to say the current stuff isn't great, but it's, like, Peter David's run, or the great Sub Diego run where San Diego sinks. Like, that was fantastic.
Yep, that was good.
So, like, yeah, like, Aquaman is such a great character, and I've never understood the hate he gets is specifically from Super Friends. And I hate Super Friends because it just ruined Aquaman in culture,
I don't know how you could watch that cartoon and be like, oh, no, Zahn and Jane, those were awesome characters. I mean,
yeah.
The whole thing.
Actually, it was Wendy and Marvin.
Wendy and Marvin.
Yeah, you know, it's like, none of the heroes look good.
Okay, take it over.
Being a big Green Lantern fan?
Yeah.
I'm a big Green Lantern fan as well, and I think you'd get a kick out of this. I got a project I'm working on where I'm tying in the different colors of the emotional spectrum into the Force.
Oh, neat. You could tie that into the lightsaber colors, too.
Well, I'm kind of staying away from the whole lightsaber thing. People unfortunately follow the movies too closely, so there's only the 3 colors.
Yeah.
Or 4 colors or whatever it is. I'm going more ancient, like even pre-Jedi.
Yeah.
So it's going to be sometime probably late in the year or early next year I'll have the project up. I think you'll get a kick out of it.
The emotional spectrum was something that I really loved it at first. Now it kind of weighs on me as Green Lanterns never interact with anybody but another color lantern. Like, you never see Hal fighting Shark or Goldface anymore. He's always fighting a Red Lantern or an Orange Lantern or, you know, like, a Yellow Lantern. Like, you never see Evil Star or, like, any of that stuff anymore. Like, and I kind of miss that stuff. I miss the more... I don't want it always to be a lantern versus lantern. Like, I kind of want the rest of them to go away now, just to be Green Lanterns and maybe Yellow Lanterns around still.
Yeah, I definitely got way too wrapped up in themselves. Yeah. But the concept of the emotional spectrum was really cool.
Yeah, I agree. It was a great concept, but then they, like, started pulling, like, Lex Luthor and all these other existing characters and making it. It's like, no.
Yeah, I think that was during Blackest Night, right?
Yeah,
that's when everybody had to be a lantern for a couple of issues, and Blackest Night is where I fell off Green Lantern, and I kind of have only kind of been following it since then. Now with the new writing teams coming on, though, I've actually been meaning to get back into it. Plus, my best friend is drawing New Guardians, Brad Walker.
Cool.
He's a Pensar New Guardian, so of course, you know, I've been buying that. I haven't read him yet, but I've been buying it since he came on. And
I basically cyber stalked you, Eric, for like a week leading up to this.
I totally forgot about the custom con stuff I had done so many years ago.
Do you guys have any other questions you want to get in before we go into the segments?
You're going to be at the NJCC in August?
Yeah. Boss Fight Studio is going to have a table at New Jersey Collector Con in August 18th, I believe.
I believe it's the 18th, yes.
Yeah, in Cherry Hill. It's it's going to be Andrew Franks, Dave Proctor, Katrina Cerisarana, and myself. We'll all be there. We'll be doing sketches for a very nominal fee. We haven't decided on that fee yet, but it will be far less than like comic artists charge because we're not famous or as good as comic artists.
That's good.
Yeah, but we will be charging a small fee for sketches of pretty much any character anybody wants. We're all super nerds, so we, you know, yeah, ask me to draw Wolverine, I can draw you Wolverine. If you ask me to draw you, you know, Speedball, I can draw you Speedball. In fact, I would love to draw somebody Speedball. No one's ever going to ask me that. But yeah, you know, we're all super nerds, so we'll be doing sketches. We'll probably have a sketchbook there for people to look through and stuff like that. I don't think we're going to be selling any or giving any out. We're still looking into the legalities of such a thing. Because most of our, you know, a sketchbook from us, as at this point, a sketchbook from us would be of product. So, like, we probably won't be able to sell them or give them out, but we will have them there to, you know, thumb through.
Yeah, very cool.
So you guys do have some projects that you guys are trying to get into the light of day.
We are working on some of our own stuff right now, but it's still very early stages and we're still trying to figure some of it out. So we have nothing to announce yet. Right. I doubt we'll have anything to announce by New Jersey, but...
No, I'm just checking in. I'm worried. I'm concerned about you. I want to make sure you got some coals in the fire.
We'll also have some sculpting, some, you know, sculpt samples there, including the, we'll probably have the, sculpt samples of the, FSS2,
the heads.
Yeah. So people can see those. We're also going to bring, I think, Dave, Andrew, and I are going to bring, a modest amount of customs to just kind of put on display, show off some of our painting skills and stuff like that, just for fun, including some that might have heads that Dave sculpted and cast just for us to use.
Any chance you can take some photos of that we can put up with this podcast? I don't know exactly when this podcast will air, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's about the same time.
I'm sure we'll have a lot of... I've been meaning to actually go through my customs and take... I just bought a photo booth recently. I've been meaning to go through my customs and take a lot of photos of them all. I have not figured out where to put them up yet, you know, whether it'll be just on Facebook or on our own site. Well, you know, Boss Fight is... We're struggling to get our own site up and up and going. So they may just end up there, or my wife and I, she's also part of the Boss Fight, we're both working on our own webcomics, this is separate of Boss Fight, so we may, you know, maybe my customs, since they're kind of just my personal, you know, hobby, they maybe my customs will end up on that site. We haven't figured it all out yet, but they should end up somewhere soon.
Well, I'm going to be attending that convention on the 18th, so I'll be sure to stop by and see you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I've got, you know, my two crappy phone pictures that I took from any of your customs. Those will go up in this podcast. And I'm pretty sure I took some regular camera pictures, so those will go up too if I can find them.
You can also pull, I posted photos from on Facebook of photos that Alyosha and I took of the customs that I took to JoeCon this year.
Oh, good.
You're welcome to pull those down and use them.
Just because people need to know, you know, you're not just a toy designer. You actually do some awesome custom.
Oh, well, thank you. I actually just recently, through Facebook, a guy I was talking to told me he found out that my handle many, many years ago on websites and stuff, on message boards, was Ringslinger74. And he was like, oh my god, you were Ringslinger. I have a bunch of photos pulled from eBay of your customs saved because they were so, you know, he thought they were good. And I shot him back immediately. I don't have photos of those anymore. Like, we can't find them. I tried to find them a while back and couldn't. And so I asked him for them, and he and his brother had a bunch of these photos, and they sent them to me.
Brother? Wait, was it the twins? Was it Chad and Matt?
Yes, it was Chad and Matt. I was just going to look up their names on Facebook, actually, right now. Yeah, it was Chad and Matt. They had all these photos, and I've been meaning to... I was going to flip them and put them up on Facebook. They're all vintage-style customs, because 25th wasn't out yet when I'd done these. I had this huge, huge collection at the time of vintage Joes, and then that's right around when I found out I had cancer. So I ended up selling them all to pay for medical bills, and my customs, that was like at the beginning of the custom game. Like, so not everybody knew that they could do it themselves, and not everybody had figured it out yet, that it's not as hard as a lot of people think it is. So I made a lot of I made pretty good money at the time, and of course it all just funneled back into bills, but so I don't regret selling all that stuff, but being able to see all these customs, some of which I had totally forgotten I had done, like these, like I had done this, like, urban Snake Eyes, Storm Shadow, and Stalker. Like, in my head, Snake Eyes, Storm Shadow, Stalker, and Scarlet are always together as a group, as a, like, a unit. So I had done these, like, urban camo versions of them, so it was like this urban camo ninja, and...
Yeah, we've talked about that on the forums. Like, certain characters, regardless of how they're portrayed in any other media, you always seem to, like, have them in your head that those guys are always together.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it's just they were on a box together, you know, on a vehicle box, or sometimes that's just how you got them. So, yeah, that's funny.
Do you have any head sculpts that you would like to license? And by that, I use that term loosely. To Joe Customs, that would become an official Joe Customs, Eric Aranya, you know, release or something like that.
I don't know if I have any. You're always welcome to do awful things with the Xandar head from the Dreadnought 7 pack.
Who's based on your, like...
is a very handsome, handsome man.
How often... that's a stupid... I already know the answer. Sorry. I can't even pretend like I don't know the answer. You guys often use each other's likeness to do sculpts and stuff.
It happened from time to time. It was happening a lot less over the past couple of years, but it still happened, and it's just something fun to do, and it's entertaining, and it's, you know, really, really cool to end up on a figure. You know, when I was working on Star Wars, it was a lot, you know, you really didn't get to do that very often, because, you know, they're all actor likenesses, unless it's like Rebel Trooper number 4, or something like that. Sometimes you got to do that sort of stuff, but not very often. G.I. Joe, it was a little easier to do that, to work that stuff in.
Eric, does Boss Fight do any official work for Hasbro?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, we've been working for Hasbro pretty much since the first or second week we were officially a company. Yeah, we still do a lot of work for Hasbro as a freelance design firm, essentially. And we will continue to do so. Like, I actually, you know, I mean, you know, the guys at Hasbro, like, they're my friends. They were my family for, you know, 5 years, 5-6 years, and I, you know, I still, they're all great guys who are in the inside still, and I still like working on all those properties. I like working, you know, if I get to work on Star Wars or Marvel or any of that stuff, it's still a great time, and we've all been pretty busy, actually, and the busier they keep us, the slower our product is taking, which kind of sucks, but at the same time, you know, we're making money, so our own product is, hopefully, you know, I hope we can make an announcement by in the next 6 months about where we're going with it, but it, you know, it may take longer. This is the first time we're doing it ourselves without, you know, the safety net of Hasbro, so we're still trying to figure out some stuff.
Congratulations on your success, sir, and wish you nothing but success in the future. And of course, everyone will be keeping their eyes peeled, and and you won't be able to shake us, really.
I'm hoping that we can put out some stuff that every you know, all the great, you know, the fans of Star Wars, the fans of G.I. Joe, and, you know, we're all those same fans, we're those same people, and we're hoping that we're going to put out something that's they want to, you know, that, like, they're going to, like, the Star Wars guy is going to walk in and see and go, I got to buy this, even though it's not a property I grew up with. This is just too cool for me to pass up. Like, we're hoping that we're, you know, going to be able to catch the Joe fans and the Transformers fans and the Star Wars fans' eye, you know. That's the hope, so.
If it's 3¾-inch compatible, I'll probably buy a bunch of it.
Well, luckily, I think all of us we're all 3¾-inch kids, you know, that's what we grew up with and that's what we like. And not that we, you know, even I collect some 6-inch stuff too, so it's not, you know, it's no dig on the other scales, but in the end, I'm 3¾-inch is the scale I love.
That's what she said?
Yep.
Cool. I don't have anything. That all the notes I wrote down, I think everything was answered and then some.
If you don't mind, we'll kick into the segments. Do you still have time to stick around, or do you have to head out?
No, I can stick around for a while.
Hey, I'm Gary.
I'm Mike.
I'm Chuck.
And I'm Justin.
Join the four of us every week on the Internet's number one and longest-running G.I. Joe podcast, What's on Joe Mind?
It's Joe news, reviews, and interviews like you've never heard them before, delivered right to your MP3 player.
Our guests include Jason Marsden, Kevin Michael Richardson, and Matt Yang King from G.I. Joe Renegades, Larry Hama, Robert Adkins, and John Barber from IDW Publishing, and many more from around the online Joe community.
Yeah, it's guys talking about Joe. Think of it as Joe Talk meets Sports Talk. And we make fun of Chuck.
Right, and we... Hey, again?
Come on, Chuck. We're just kidding, kinda.
Sometimes Chuck makes fun of himself.
Right, and we... Okay, seriously, this is just getting ridiculous now.
It's What's on Joe Mind, every week on the Geekcast Radio Network, InsidePulse.com, Stitcher Smart Radio, and iTunes. Download and listen today.
I suppose I still can't say something about Transformers, can I?
Good.
No.
What about sports?
That sounds good.
Yeah, that's all right.
Outstanding! Best of the best of the best, sir. With honor.
I gave it a ten. Woo!
Let's start with you. Have you seen any customs recently that stuck out to you, Eric?
Oh yeah, I am.
Sorry for putting you on the spot, but
no, I'm actually going to pull it up right now. There's a lot of great ones popping up all over the place lately, but this gentleman, Oreo Builder, on his tank and his insane Battlecore month daily updates has completely floored me. Just
can we get you to revise that first part about Oreo Builder on his tank? Only because Oreo Builder is a member of multiple sites, including our own.
Including Joe Customs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
and his own blog. He belongs to the community.
Yeah. Do you really want me to...
No, we're not one of those sites. We're fine with that. It doesn't matter where you found him. The only thing that matters is that you found him.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm sorry. But yeah, his this Battlecore thing, the Hall of Fame Grunt and Heavy Duty, and you know, all of these are so great. The Hell Vipers. I'm currently working on some Hell Vipers myself right now. So just seeing his just kind of ramped me into high gear. And his barricade is amazing. I did a barricade a while back for myself, and I think I may be taking mine apart and redoing it, copying his build, because his is way better than mine is.
The barricade is probably my favorite he's done. And that's saying a lot, because I really like the lifeline, you know, that he did.
Oh, but, yeah.
You know, just, yeah, it's just sharp looking.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of other ones. Recently, I just saw Kevin Watts did a bunch of Ghost Ninjas.
Yeah, those ninjas looked awesome.
Just really nice. There's always great, great customs on so many sites.
I just wish there was a place you could go, just one place.
Oreo Builder's Crazy Train. That thing's awesome.
Yeah, the train would be great enough, you know, but to do the engineer and...
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, on top of all the small playsets that he did, come on, man, now you're just showing off.
Yeah, he's pretty amazing.
What about you, Dan? Have you seen anything?
I saw Dr. Robert Strange's Brainiac just blew me away. That thing was beautiful. I love the metallic purple torso. It's very, very, even though it wasn't directly from any comic book version of the character, instantly when I saw it, I knew who it was supposed to be. It was a great sci-fi take on the character. I really enjoyed that. The Ben 10s we were talking about before.
TR-101ALs, yeah.
TR-101ALs, Ben 10s. Very, very cool. And actually, Flattery said they were inspired by my Ben 10,000 from a year or so back. So that's pretty cool. I was really blown away by Past Nastification's Dr. Chapel to fit in with the Star Trek motion picture figures. It looks like something that would have been produced around that era. It was just a beautiful piece. And he matched the colors, even though it was an incorrect color on the toy compared to the movie source material. He matched it to look just like the Decker figure, the same color uniform. And it honestly looks like an unproduced figure from, I think, Mego produced those back in the day.
Yeah.
It's just very, very cool. Those are the things I think that really jumped out at me this week.
Bucky's been putting out a bunch of, you know, lazy customs, minimal paint. He's been putting a lot more paint on than I would call LVC, but, man, just churning them out.
Yep. Bucky's always done good work. He always has.
Yeah, he had some of his customs. He brought them to the Joe Customs table in Indy, and he's like, "Do you mind if I set up?" I'm like, "Mind? Are you kidding me? Let me clear all my junk off. You go ahead."
I think my favorite custom since the last time we've been talking, I found out on Facebook, and I just found it today. I think it just got posted today, and that's from Joe Customs member Starbuck. Of course, I didn't find him on Facebook under that name, but I reached out to him and asked him if he could throw it up on the site, and he not only put it up in the gallery, but he threw it in the critique thread tonight, and that's his female version of Flash, and I looked at it, and it was just, it's so perfect, so simple. Inspired, just done. And so I asked him to put it up there because I'm going to steal it and I'm going to make a Bombardier version of it.
So, that is a very, like you said, very simple, very effective figure. I saw this a few minutes ago myself. Really nice.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, Starbuck, he's pretty much the go-to person when you're talking about, you know, doing the dial tone switch of sexes from one...
Gender-bending customs?
Yeah, the gender-bending. And, I mean, he's just a master at it. He just nails it every time. That and neon paint. He's pretty good with neon paint, too. The one that stuck out to me just today, he put up his second work in progress of it, was Iron Will's Buck Rogers and the Starfighter that he made. Using, you know, the snow speeder body and just modifying. Oh, man. That thing's going to be awesome when he tidies it up, but... It's already off to a great start.
That is going to be very cool. I don't want to comment on it yet because it's not, you know, it's barely in the beginning stages, but I can see in my mind's eye how good that's going to look when it's done.
Yeah, yeah. No, I get that. I have a hard time commenting on works in progress, you know, unless I have a directional kind of thing, like maybe you should do this instead of that. Unless it's that, I'm not going to be like, oh, yeah, that's awesome, because it's not done yet.
Yeah, that's why I never post any work in progress stuff. I wait till it's all done to put it up. But I missed the fact that he took off the collar. I thought the collar looked really cool.
See, I'm so stuck on the 70s TV show, I couldn't stick with the collar. I mean, I get it. It's probably fitting of the character, I'm sure. Sure, the comic strip, he had something similar at some point, but nah, I like it much better without the collar.
Yeah. Well, I don't remember anything distinct like that as far as the collar on the character, but it just fit that, like, 1970s. Like, I could see Gil Gerard with his collar up, you know, that's how...
Yeah.
It worked.
I can see that helmet not fitting on with that collar, though.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's like you're a designer or something. You think about that.
Speaking of helmet not fitting on with the collar, are you guys circumcised?
Oh,
Oh wait, is that for part two?
I don't know what to say.
Is halfway an answer?
I saw this movie, nothing.
Eric, you've mentioned a couple of customs that you've got on your workbench. Were there any other ones that you're actually working on custom-wise?
Eric, before you jump in, I just want to do one thing. I want to introduce this segment by saying, customizing, customizing, workbench, workbench.
I'm weird. I have a lot of customs that I work on at one time in different stages, in varying stages. Like, I have ones that I'm still just piecing together and digging through my parts box and re-kitbashing and stuff. And they're, like, kind of in a like, almost like a little, like, toolkit thing. So each one is in their own separate little container within these boxes. So I'm very organized about it. So I've got all the parts that I'm thinking about using in this one little tray, and then I kind of mess with them. And as I get them closer to finished, I, you know, pull parts out and throw them back in my chotch bin. But, like, then that stuff, when it finally gets ready, it goes up on my table when I'm ready to paint it. So currently what's on my table is I usually have about 6 or 7 figures set up, like, sitting on my workbench at a time. Currently what's on my workbench is Kickstop, who is a fake character named by Troy McKee, based on the BMX artwork from 1982-1983, that essentially looked like a green shirt with Snake Eyes' head.
Right.
Riding a BMX bike.
for the actual G.I. Joe padding that went onto your actual bike as a kid.
Yeah. So I've got him, like, he's on my workbench doing a kind of a... that concept case beachhead from Louisiana JoeCon. I've got the parts aside for him. Like, he's sitting in my workbench. A new interrogator is sitting on my workbench, and three sludge vipers are sitting on my workbench.
Very interesting.
And one of my sludge vipers is going to be a zombie. So,
Dan, what about you? How are those zombies coming?
Well, I just finished the one you guys saw on Friday that I put up. The rest of them, I'm really tempted to start painting them now, but I'm not going to debut the project till October, so I have some other stuff I'm working on in the meantime, including the aforementioned Astromech droid using the Yoda droid dome. And I'm actually putting the finishing touches on construction on my orc army. You remember last time I told I had finalized all their armor designs? Now I'm actually building all the straps and buckles and whatnot that holds the armor on. So hopefully they'll be ready for paint in another week or so.
Jeff?
I don't know what I want to tell you guys about.
Oh, stop being so shy.
Well, I haven't really finished the last things I was telling you guys about.
Yeah, it happens.
I wound up buying one of those 50 heads for $50 from one of the dudes off eBay. So now I've got 50 new whips to start thinking about, which means I'll probably make like two or three and then put the rest of those heads in a contest on Joe Customs.
Is that the Star Wars geek eBay stuff?
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah.
He does good stuff.
He does.
His work is very, very good.
And I'll tell you what, I was expecting one of those grab bags where you get a bunch of air holes and other crap, and instead every single one's perfect. If you get a chance, and if anybody has the extra cash, that's a good way to really get a jump start on some cast heads.
I'll tell you what, somebody needs to start casting those Storm Shadow legs. It's starting to run out. Those just straight legs, straight pant legs, you know?
Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about. Let's see, I'm working on a Popeye.
Like as a Joe or just standalone?
No, like as a Joe. He'll be a flag crew member.
Nice.
I'm still working on those two Mobius characters. I'm trying to do a classic 70s as well as the Marvel Knights version. I've been running into some issues with those, but I'm moving forward. I've got my big super secret project this summer that will involve a Warthog custom. It's going to be epic. That's about it. I started thinking about the vehicle level of Castle Destro just because I need to clear some fodder out of the garage.
I'm still working on that Wounded Warriors baseball softball player. I'm hoping to finish that up. Get a good jump on tidying up some things tomorrow, and then...
As a quick aside, are you the only one working on that?
Dan of the Dead did, like, four modern era versions, and I'll get with him on what we're going to do with those. And then Chad, Tim121RVC, he did the Storm Shadow from the Vietnam era. They're going to do Storm Shadow carrying snake eyes out of the jungle.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because that kind of mimicked... They're trying to mimic how the Wounded Warriors logo looks using Storm Shadow and Snake Eyes, and it's really fitting for the characters as well.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is pretty nice. Really just very, very clean and smooth paints on that.
Yeah, Tim and Chad, I knew whatever they came up with, they were going to nail it. You know, they're just really good with O-ring figures and just everything.
What's the end result of those going
to
be?
We're going to try to put them on eBay and raffle them off, and all proceeds go either to the Wounded Warriors project or to the Wounded Warriors softball team. I'm not sure the best avenue that we want to go with that, but it'll definitely go to one of those two organizations, the entirety of it.
That's a noble cause. It really is.
I got to give credit to J-Man and Red Claw for kind of coming up with that and really pushing it. We brought it up to Hasbro, but some things just, you know, it's got to fit in, it's got to make sense, it's more of a PR marketing thing, so I think it's a lot easier for the fans to do it. And that's really it. I don't know, I'm kind of in a summer vacation lull right now, and I'm okay with that.
Well, you got all the new Joes to look forward to in, what, like 3 weeks or whatever it is?
Yeah.
All right, dude, what segments we got left?
We were going to talk a little bit about, like, camo and stuff. Like, some technique that you used. It's a question we always get asked. How do you do, like, camo? How do you do this camo? How do you do digital camo? Are there any different techniques you guys are used, or something, if you have to do something that's really hard, some way you do it?
I'm going to go first because I have the easiest thing, all right?
Sure.
I take a kitchen sponge and I cut off a little triangle of it. I paint whatever I want to camouflage, you know, the base color, normally green. And then I take that sponge and I dip it in tan, brown, and black, usually in that order. But I just, one color at a time. And I dip it around on whatever I want to camouflage. And then I go to the next color, do the same. Third color, do the same, and I call that my camo. That's the easiest way I've ever seen anybody do camo, and I don't claim it for my own, but it's the only way I'll do it because I have no patience.
Yeah, I think Tier Winner, he's the first person I ever saw do that.
If he's not here to defend himself.
if you got to do like modern digital camo, that's the way to do it. It just comes out looking nice and fit, yeah. You know, toyish. You know,
you're essentially creating a stamp that way.
Right.
Yeah, yes. An organic looking stamp though.
Mm-hmm. But you could even using that same type of thing, you could go to like Michael's and stuff, they make those stamp making kits. You could use that rubber to cut like digital shapes into and actually use it as if you wanted to do like a more digital looking look, you could use that to do digital camo. Art stores will sell those stamp making rubber, and you could just cut it and shave it down the way you need it, the shape you need.
Also, and just throw a plug in here, if you design a camo that you would like to see put on a rubber stamp, Joe Customs member Hulk Hogan will laser that into a piece of rubber that you can then either put on the end of a pencil or a piece of foam tape and have your own stamp of that made. And I know that because I've done it.
That's cool.
He did a couple of Cobra symbols for, like, you know, stamping on crates and stuff, and those look pretty awesome. The only technique, you know, the basic woodland four-colored camo, brown, black, two shades of green. The only thing I probably do is I actually draw the camo on. That way it's just kind of like a paint by colors when once you actually start. You don't have to figure out which jelly bean goes over which liver kind of thing. You kind of figure out you know where the splotches are already going to be. That's the only real technique I have that most people don't know about.
Yeah, unfortunately, I really don't have anything to add on that. I don't really paint camouflage.
Well, what about what other paint techniques do you know, Dan?
Lots of dry brushing. Basically, when I dry brush, I start with the darkest one first and work my way up in lighter and lighter shades. Anytime you see any of any of my characters that I have would look like worn clothing or even battle damage on vehicles, that's all dry brushing. And it's all done by hand. I don't do any airbrushing. One, I don't own one, and two, I don't know how to use one. So.
I thought it was something. Anytime I do a metallic, I do a base coat of silver. I just think it makes the gold pop, the emerald pop. I just like to do the silver first.
That's actually how Iron Man figures are painted, because they're painted silver and then with layers of red and gold over that.
Very interesting.
You stumbled on an actual manufacturing process.
They stole it from me. That was trademark key love. Yeah. Well, Eric, if one wanted to paint the awesomest Hawaiian shirt, how would they go about doing it?
Patience. Lots of patience. Or you just have somebody make a tiny soft goods Hawaiian shirt to put on the figure. A gentleman named Rogelio made the one that's on my self-custom for me.
Wait a second, we know that dude.
Yeah, I can't remember his last name. Casas?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's Caluminati to you Joe Customs members. He is well known in our community.
Yeah, he's really good. Yeah, he made me a couple of Hawaiian shirts and some bandanas. He actually threw in some bandanas for me, little scale bandanas for me to put on figures. As far as camo painting goes, I don't overthink it very much. I usually keep it to two color, because I want it to still look like production. I try to make my customs look as close to production as possible. So I tend to keep to two color, maybe three. I just patience. I go in and I do a little shape and I do another little shape and I do another little shape. Sometimes I'll look at a vintage figure if I'm copying that vintage figure, and I'll find good turnaround photographs of the vintage figure, and I will literally copy as close as you can that vintage deco, even down to the shapes and where the camo starts and where it ends and stuff like that. And that tends to help a lot, especially with like a character like Pathfinder, who's got like, you know, his color scheme is so appealing, but his deco is really simple. So like one of the appealing things is the balance of orange and green on the black pants with the camo. Like, so I didn't want to mess with that balance, so I just copied his pattern exactly.
I find with, like, if you're doing a gender bender custom or an alternate universe, that kind of detail, you know, where you just kind of transpose the patterns or whatever, that's really helpful for when you're identifying a character out of its element.
Yeah. I mean, and even if you're doing a new character and you just find a camo pattern you like that's on an existing figure and look at it, kind of mimic it, even if it's not an exact replication, it'll give you the inspiration you need to make it look right and look cool. But camo, for me, it's all about patience and being able to sit there with a tiny brush and do those shapes.
Let's talk about calendar. San Diego Comic-Con next week, right?
Yep. Yep.
Hey, if you're going, can you do me a favor and pick me up a set? Oh.
You know, Hunter PR actually sent out a thing saying we could get like 15 minutes of time with the Hasbro design team. And knowing that I'm not going, just salt in the wound.
Oh.
It's like, oh, yeah, thanks. Can I call in? Is it a call-in show?
When is the NJ New Jersey? What's the official thing and when's the date?
New Jersey Collectors Club, August 18th.
And that is right before August 26th, which is when the next No Joe Challenge is due, which is 70 sitcoms, right?
Yep.
You got something in mind?
Nope.
Then I suggest you do the entire Brady Bunch.
I might just do Martian and David Cassidy. I think that's the way to go there. Oh, I shouldn't be talking about that. That's top secret.
It is.
Operation Partridge Family is going to be in full effect.
No, I'm good. I don't have anything else. My wife is pissed because we were supposed to be watching Game of Thrones like 46 minutes ago.
That's what the DVR is for.
Yeah, but you can't DVR your wife going to bed.
Oh.
Yeah. I'll hear about it tomorrow, but that's all right, because guess who's going to see Alice Cooper tomorrow night? Oh, that's right. Me.
Wow, that's very cool. Alice Cooper's my favorite. I've probably seen him like 20 times, but I haven't seen him in a few years now. But he's amazing.
Cool. Very cool. Yeah, I guess he's doing the full theatric.
Oh, yeah. It's him and Marilyn Manson, right? Is it that tour?
It's that tour, but I'm not certain that Manson's going to be at the show tomorrow night.
Yeah, that's no great loss. But he's just a poor man's Alice Cooper anyway.
So that's it for me. Thanks, Eric.
Oh, no problem. Thank you for having me, guys.
Yeah, thanks, Eric. Thank you for finally, you know, coming on. I'm just ecstatic that we finally got to make this happen.
Anytime you want me to come on, I will come on just for fun because I like talking about toys.
I got to schedule everything around Jeff's wife. It's kind of complicated.
Yeah, actually, that's true.
Dan, any parting shots?
No, nothing I can think of, but Eric, I will be seeing you on the 18th.
Yeah, I'll be there.
I'll be stopping by the table for a bit.
Yep. Come get a sketch.
Awesome. Thanks a lot.
No problem.
So fine. I want you all and everything, just to be mine. But you're my baby. at the call. You're pleasing to behold. I'd call you Jaguar if I may be so bold. But you're my babe. Yes, you're my love.
Trying to reconnect, Brad. I'm going to step out for 1 second. I just got to hit the measure. I'll be right back.
Okay. It's the one without a skirt, Spectre.
Oh.
That's a Darth Vader silhouette.
Oh, tell him that. It's going to be awesome.
I love that you think he has that in his house.
Once again, the world is a safe place to be, thanks to the G.I. Joe team of experts. G.I. Joe, a real American hero.